We have a huge episode of Podcast Them Softly tonight to coincide with our Hugh Jackman theme. We are not going to talk to Hugh Jackman, unfortunately. But I am joined with three special people that on my screen, it looks like Hollywood Squares. So, firstly, we are rejoined with Joel Copling, who has his own website called joelonfilm.com. And he joined us for a Minority Report chat years ago, back in...
It's been 2 years, I think.
Yeah, back in the launch of Podcast Them Softly. Along with Joel, we are also joined with Kyle Jonathan, who has his website 39 Frames. Kyle, how are you doing today?
Doing great. Glad to be here.
Awesome. And last but not least, we're joined with Big Sexy himself, Ben Collimer, of The Movie Review. Ben, how are you doing today?
I'm great.
Okay, that didn't come in too well. Just so everybody knows, Ben is staying at a hotel with dial-up internet. So if you hear some noise distortion, it's going to be Ben.
All my fault, I'll accept the blame.
There we go. Okay, it came in all right there. I'm not going to have to edit too much out then, because I already covered my ass at the beginning. So anyway, what we're going to focus on today is we're going to focus on Logan, which came out last week. We're also going to talk about Hugh Jackman and the Wolverine, since the guy has played Wolverine 7 times in the course of 17 years. So I wanted to get everybody on here today because all four of us saw Logan. All four of us were super fucking jacked for this movie. And I think it kind of tears off a little bit. Joel wrote a blowjob review for the movie, which we'll get into. Ben really liked it. I liked it. I don't think Kyle liked it as much as I did.
So, no, I don't think I liked it as much as everyone.
Everyone did. Okay. You know, because the hype machine was very loud going into this movie. I mean, it was like, it wasn't quite Star Wars, The Force Awakens hype, but I mean, it was a big deal. It was R-rated. It was Hugh Jackman's last turn as the Wolverine. We'll see how that goes. And I think the hype of Deadpool really kind of set this movie up into this gigantic opus of R-rated violence, and it was like the best Western since Clint Eastwood's Unforgiven, and it was Cormac McCarthy-esque. And before we get into it, I just want to point out that anybody who's comparing this to Cormac McCarthy, I don't think has really read Cormac McCarthy. But anyway, let's start with Joel. Joel, why did you like this movie so much?
I'm unaffected by hype trains, generally speaking. I don't want to put myself on a high horse, but I'm not generally affected by hype trains. I actually wasn't all that stoked for this movie until I saw the trailer set to Johnny Cash, that song the Nine Inch Nails wrote. And then I was like, okay. It was mainly because I didn't like at all James Mangold's previous try at this. I felt like he was limited by the PG-13 in that case. And I'd heard, you know, going into this that there was going to be an R rating, but until I saw that trailer, I really wasn't into it. I felt like, you know, this, it was his last attempt, but I just felt like it was just going to be your usual superhero movie. And then I feel like it's pared down a bit. It's very sparse I think that the reason people are comparing it to Cormac McCarthy, which I agree is completely, it's overstating the movie a little bit.
Thank God. I'm ready to pound on you.
A friend of mine saw it at the press screening on February 16th, and he kind of called it No Country for X-Men. Which, you know, I mean, okay, it's certainly less busy than a lot of superhero movies. But so my hype was kind of on the level. You know, I was more excited after the trailers started releasing. Once I started seeing where the movie was going, of course, for me, when it comes to actually sitting down and watching, I reject all of it. I just watch the movie, honestly. And that's, you know, I really liked it. I have a few problems, but I really liked it. And for me, a big part of it was how thoughtful it was. I didn't find that at all in the previous Wolverine attempts, standalone ones. I felt like they've gotten sort of to the essence of his character before, especially in something like X2, where he was trying to investigate his past with Stryker, and felt like that was what they were attempting with Origins, but I didn't feel that worked at all. But anyway, for me, it was just like the idea of something a bit different from the previous standalone efforts. And it was certainly that, and it was very, very satisfying for me.
Let me just interject real quick. For anybody who's listening, we're going to get really hardcore into spoilers here as we get into the conversation. I probably should have led with that a little bit. But, Ben, what was your love for this movie pertaining to? Ben? Okay, we're going to come back to Ben while he... calls AOL to get his connection back. We're gonna go to Kyle.
Oh, yeah, that's...
Ben dropped the call. While we try and get Ben back, Kyle?
Yeah.
Why don't you tell us why... Well, give us your assessment.
Okay. So I will fully admit I was on the hype train. I saw Hurt cover trailer and the second trailer, I forget the song you used in that one, I was blown away. I was like, finally. Because in general, I'm not as in love with the Marvel formula as a lot of folks. I mean, I like them, they're fun, but like, it's just like with Civil War, and they rehash a lot.
This is not...
Keep in mind, though, that this is Fox. I think we should.
Oh no! Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Absolutely.
We should
absolutely. And,
right.
And but just in general, I'm always
right. No,
just
I
me
hear you.
I'm just hesitant when it comes to the superhero genre. And so I was like, oh, finally, R-rated. It's gonna be great. And then some of the guys that I write with over at Movie Sleuth, they used the No Country for X-Men thing in their review, and they were all hyping it, and I was like, okay, all right, cool. This is gonna be great. And so I went in, and I didn't dislike it. I do want to say that. I mean, I enjoyed it. I just didn't fall in love with it.
Right.
Weak villains, that was there. But I understand. My theory is that Time is actually the villain in this film, and I got that and everything. And it was skin deep. It was like it flirted with these great ideas, and Stewart gives the performance of a lifetime. I really hope he gets
some of the best work he's done.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I really hope he gets some kind of recognition. I know awards don't like to do the whole genre thing, but he did a really good job. The Daphne Keene did a great job.
She steals the movie.
Absolutely. And Jackman did a great job. I mean, he gives a great performance. Some of the framing was kind of off for me. I don't know. Like, it was just – like, you start off that – We already said spoiler warning, so I'm going to get a little specific. But, like, I love that intro shot with, like, the Logan title, while he's on the ground after getting shot down. And, you just see him wake up while he's being carjacked, essentially. I love that, set the tone perfectly. But then it just, like, they had the uninteresting, at least to me, the uninteresting guy tracking down the girl and all that. And I just think ultimately it was, like, okay, like I knew you basically knew how it was gonna go right from the jump. There wasn't, at least for me, there wasn't a whole lot of surprises. I don't want to be too negative on it though, but I loved the costuming. I loved the simple limo driver getup. I was thinking about this because I've been thinking a lot about it, and I was like, was I too harsh on it? I loved how he had the extra suits,
right?
Like
right,
he, you know, Right, like he just, you know, like that's my life. Like I get in fights, and you know, I need to change really quick. I love that the little dashes of the world, the entire water tank with Xavier in it was just cool. Caliban, Stephen Merchant, awesome.
Yeah.
That character was great. His arc was great. The makeup was good.
I like the fact that he grounded Jackman and Stewart while they were off the reservation, as it were.
Mm. Yes.
Yeah, Ben's back. We're good.
I was just kind of explaining why I wasn't as enamored with it as a lot of other folks. I also like it was like R-rated for me because they wanted it to be R-rated. I think we talked a little bit about that, Frank. But like, I don't know, like I got kind of called out by some folks because I was talking about the violence, and I was like, yeah, it's violent, but like, I don't know, like everybody's saying like, you know, don't bring your kids and this is super brutal. It wasn't really, it was CGI. I'm not a huge fan of that. Everybody, you know, most people know. I mean, it was brutal, but it was fast. It was, and there wasn't any attachment to anybody that the harm was being done to. Like the endless super soldier guy, it just kind of got repetitive. Like even the fight choreography, while it's awesome and it's flashy, like with the Hurin Karana and X-23 or everything, but just by like the final in the forest thing, I was kind of like, okay, all right, you know, and then
Right. I had a very similar reaction to everything you just said, and to just digress slightly, I'll get to you in a sec, Ben. You know, I think you and I have a parallel with our reviews, and we kind of run this gambit to where neither one of us wrote a negative review for the movie. It just wasn't like this, you know, blanket greatness review. I had a lot of issues with the movie, but I still enjoyed it. And, you know, I think we kind of have to brace ourselves for people like jumping on our ass about it because, you know,
yeah.
we weren't overjoyed with the movie. But for me, there was a couple of things that kind of bothered me about the film. The big thing for me was X-24. That's the D.H. Hugh Jackman, right? X-24 was the bad guy, the bad Hugh Jackman, right?
Because
X-23 is the chick. Okay. I will say they did an excellent job of saving that. They didn't give that away in the trailer because trailers these days pretty much give everything away in a movie and you know it's going to happen. I mean, Jesus Christ, how many trailers have come out where like the final scene is in the trailer?
Right.
I wasn't crazy about X-23. For as much as I love the de-aging in Rogue One, and I think it serves a gigantic purpose in some stuff, I think it's running the gambit of becoming gimmicky. The second thing that I had a fucking gigantic hang-up on, and, you know, everybody knows this, that I fucking am unapologetic with my love for Wolverine Origins. I fucking love that movie, dude. I think it's awesome. It's my favorite Wolverine movie. I will fully admit that Logan and the Wolverine are much better made movies, aesthetically, thematically, narratively, in any way possible, they're better movies, but I prefer Origins, and that gets me to my point of Liev Schreiber as Victor Creed in Origins, I think is one of the best performances in any X-Men movie, and considering the overwhelming, to the point of overbearing theme of family that Logan consists of with, you know, the little girl's his daughter. Professor X is essentially his father. The entire time I'm waiting for Victor Creed to show up. You know, because we're promised that in Origins, at the end of the movie, in the botched third act of the movie when they're fighting the super mutant Deadpool thing that's just not a good third act of a movie, and then Creed shows up and they fight back to back and it's like, hey, we're brothers again, see you in the sequel. That never happens, right? I think that Creed should have shown up in the third act of the movie and fought side by side with Logan against the mutant hunters, and a cool way of bringing that in would be the whole point of Creed not getting to Adamantium and Origins was because he's not as strong as Logan. His regeneration isn't as good. The process would have killed him. And here's the catch. The Adamantium kills Logan. He gets poisoned from it. Creed is stronger than Logan, finally. You know, he's the superior brother, and then he leads the children to Canada. That was kind of my thing. I mean, it's not a big deal, and a couple people I've talked to have jumped on my ass about it, because it's like, the movie didn't need Creed. It didn't even, you know, the thought didn't even cross my mind. And then back to your point, Kyle, the movie was rated R to be rated R. I mean, that movie could have been told in a PG-13
absolutely
film. I mean, if you take away the 30 fucks that were used in the movie, and then probably take away the sever head that old girl throws at Boyd Holbrook at the beginning of the movie, and then maybe a couple of the...
when he shoots him in the face.
Right, that kind of stuff. Yeah. Not that I think it's bad that the movie's rated R. I like where it's going. I hope we're going to get a little bit more R-rated movies. Marvel will never do it. I know they won't. It seems like Fox is shifting towards R with everything they want to do with the future X-Force movies with Deadpool and Cable. We'll see how that works out. I think DC's back to chasing its tail about what it wants to do with the whole R-rated thing and letting other studios dictate their future. I would just like to point out that Zack Snyder was making R-rated comic book movies before it was cool, because I have to give my shameless DC plug, because I'm the only person that likes DC.
I love the DC stuff too.
Thank you.
Yeah, I do.
I got another person.
Same here.
There we go.
I like the ultimate edition of Batman v Superman.
Yes, yes.
Suicide Squad.
It single-handedly made me not like the theatrical version, but I like that before I saw the Ultimate Edition.
Okay, well, I'll still be the only flag bearer for Suicide Squad. That's fine.
Oscar-winning
Suicide Squad. God, I got so excited when that happened.
That was awesome.
It was amazing that happened. But anyway, the last thing I want to bring up was another point that Kyle made. The big bad of the movie's time, I get it. But at the same time, Boyd Holbrook is just, like, outmatched in every frame by Hugh Jackman. It's not even funny.
I liked Holbrook because I felt like he was. I mean, it's not at all a complex character. It's a generic bad guy. But I liked how he chewed the scenery with that accent. I really liked his presence as a character, fairly typical. But
he was gimmicky with his mechanical hand and his gold tooth. Yeah. Like, I get it. The thing that I'll get to you in a sec, Ben. Don't worry. I'll get to you after I make
no
this
worries.
Point. The thing that I was really disappointed with was Richard E. Grant, who I love. I think Richard E. Grant's great. It's like, oh, I didn't even know he was in this movie. It's like, oh, this is fucking great. And then he just, like, shows up in the third act, and it's like, and then they make some mention of his father, and it's like, are you Stryker's kid? Like, did anybody catch that part where he?
I was wondering about that. I was wondering
like,
about
who,
that.
Who's his father? Brian Cox, or like Danny Houston? When Stryker's like American and not English, but like whatever.
and they didn't use him.
Right.
I mean, like you have all this talent, and they just they're like, oh, we're gonna just put him in here for like two scenes and a video.
Right. It's like what was it like budget casting? It's like, you know, we'll get Boyd Holbrook, and then we'll get Richard E. Grant, who, I mean, not to take away anything from either one of the guys. But.
It's such weird casting for Richard E. Grant. It's a guy that I'm, you know, vaguely aware of from my childhood, although I can't tell you what I saw him in my
Warlock.
It made me want to rewatch Dracula when I was sitting in the theater. Francis Ford Coppola's Dracula. I was dude, I haven't seen that movie in forever.
And
Richard Grant's so like, with Nail and Eye.
With Nail and Eye. And Warlock, of course, the ultimate 80s cheese.
Right. Richard E. Grant's always good, but, you know,
He was a disappointing element of the movie for me. I felt like he was just kind of existing in the background. It didn't bother me as much as I thought it would at first. I was just like, okay, well, they're barely using him, so they're probably going to just barely use him. And then he's going to show up at the end, and that's it.
Right. His
comeuppance is so like throwaway. It's just so throwaway.
Yeah.
I will say that I completely forgot about him, and I didn't even include him in my review.
Yeah, neither did I. Oh, no, I think I did. I kind of made, like, a shade. I was just kind of like, yeah, and Richard E. Grant just shows up, and, like, that's it.
I think I was too busy talking about how they decide to base the plot on a typical Western trope, and then put the Western film in the movie.
Oh, dude, when they show,
like,
Shane.
I was like, oh my God, you're
I
not.
Know,
you
that
know,
was a bit
and
much.
The eulogy at the, I mean, now don't get me wrong, even not being super wild with it, I did get a little teary-eyed with the whole turning the cross to the X. That was awesome. But yeah. I was like, oh my God, I like that they used that as
There was an emotional logic to using that. I thought it was a bit much. It was a bit on the nose, but I liked it.
Dude, but Shane has an ambiguous ending.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
You know what I mean? It's like, yeah, he's probably dead because he's slumped on the saddle, like riding off into the sunset. But I will say this though. How many times?
Well, that was their way of saying that this was an ambiguous ending. That he's probably going to come back. Or something.
Of course he's going to come back. He's died in like four movies.
Yeah.
Is anybody bothered by the fact that most of social media has likened Logan to Unforgiven rather than Shane?
I don't know why nobody's talking about it being The Professional.
Right.
that was the biggest. That's a great point, Ben, about the Unforgiven piece. Which I definitely kind of, I mean, there are similarities, but you can find similarities in everything. But like Unforgiven is like the anti-Western, This wasn't the anti-comic book movie. This was just an adult comic book movie with adult themes.
I will say something that I really, really liked, and I didn't expect to when I heard about it, but I really liked how they used the fact that there are comic books in this universe.
That was cool.
Because it wasn't just like this like little wink thing. It was actually commenting on his mindset where he's reading these stories that have been pumped full of, like, you know, spectacle and histrionics and all that, and they're actually the deaths of his friends. And he's having to read these comic books that he just finds them to be utter BS. And I really liked that. I really liked how they used comic books to comment on his nature. His nature can be cynical, and he's being cynical about them right then.
I like that a lot.
And I thought it was a good way of bringing his character back to the fact that the world still needs him. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Needs saving.
I want to bring up the fact that I think they really had a missed opportunity with kind of exploring what happened with Professor X and how his seizure killed all the X-Men.
The X-Men. Yeah.
I mean, Jesus, dude, when, like, they dropped that. I mean, they're very subtle about that. I'll give them credit. Like, they're very subtle about, like, what happened. And then, like, when the big seizure happens, that scene's incredible, by the way, when, like, Logan's fighting his way through the hotel, through the seizure, to kill these guys and give him his medicine.
It was an interesting way to twist slow motion. I really liked that. They actually found a reason to have slow motion, and it was the fact that it was slow motion. It was literally slow motion. So
I feel that there would have been a gigantic emotional investment, even more so, had there have been maybe not a flashback, but some sort of like introspective moment where Logan is thinking about Jean Grey's head popping or something to that effect, because I mean that's essentially what happened. Is Professor X had this terrible seizure and probably fucking wiped out more than just the X-Men.
Right.
I think that might have ruined X-24's murder of him in the farmhouse stuff.
Yeah, I think it would have intruded on that scene, and also we got to remember that flashbacks are a gamble on a storytelling level because it's very, very easy to rely on that. It's a very easy way to relay exposition, and I feel like his talking to who he thinks is the real Logan. That was perfect because you got the little moment of Patrick Stewart's acting rather than flashing back
right.
and interrupting the scene and interrupting that flow. I felt like there was a jolt at the end of that scene when he stabbed, and it wouldn't have felt like a jolt. I very much don't think that it would have felt like a jolt anymore.
I got to tell you, when I saw that, and I had the opportunity, I was invited to the press screening in early February, so I actually saw the movie 2 weeks before its general release, 3 weeks. I felt like that entire farmhouse sequence with X-24 was totally a dream. The way they shot it, the way they cut it, it just felt very much like a dream. And when it was over, it's like they just killed Professor X.
Yeah. Yep.
Well,
wow.
I thought it was great because I think an underlying theme to Logan, the character, not necessarily the movie, but it applies, is that he brings death with him.
Yes.
Everywhere he goes. I mean, in Origins, the scene in the farmhouse with the old couple and, you know, Agent Zero and whoever shows up and the old people get killed after, like, you know, giving him clothes and shelter and food. And that's kind of Logan's thing, man.
Yep.
Is
yep.
The guy was born into violence. He was made into a weapon of war. And everywhere he goes, he just fucking brings shit with him and people die. And I do think that's a very important aspect of his character. And I did sort of struggle with it with, like, Eric LaSalle shows up in the family and it's just kind of like, Eric LaSalle, I haven't seen this guy
right.
since ER.
ER.
Right? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's just kind of interesting how this shows up and then they go off on their own little storyline with, like, the water and fixing the valve and shit. And it's just like, what? But to get back to your point, Joel, with when Professor X gets killed, I was just kind of taken aback by the, you know, I don't necessarily know if that was a de-aged Hugh Jackman. I don't know. I guess I'd have to see the movie again. It probably wasn't because Hugh Jackman's really good looking and really youthful looking when he's not. The makeup is phenomenal in this movie.
I think that they just instead of graying his hair, they just left it as it is and maybe shaved it, obviously. But I'm feeling there was more makeup on Logan, the real
right.
Logan, in this movie than there was on the X-24 Logan.
Yes. Stewart's makeup was really good too, actually.
Yeah,
yeah.
And he lost
yes.
like 20 pounds. I mean, I shouldn't say he looked amazing, but I mean, his character looked incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was really telling of his state.
What was that, Ben?
It was really telling of his state of mind and his condition, and I really liked that aspect of it.
Yeah.
Well, I guess, let me ask you this, Ben. We didn't get to you because you cut out, but what was it that you really liked about this film?
So I'm going to be the negative Nelly here in starting out, and I'll work my way through it. But I am not a general comic book movie fan. I grew up in the 80s. I like the I like Superman. I like Batman. I grew up with both of them. Obviously, I grew up with 80s fantasy movies, and so I can relate to the comic book.
What about
book
the Dolph Lundgren Punisher movie?
Oh, one of my absolute favorite movies, actually, and I'm not being cynical. I really do like it.
That movie
yeah.
is awesome.
Right.
Yep.
Anyway.
I went into this without really thinking about it as a comic book movie, and when I take that aspect out of it, I appreciated the movie so much more. It felt like the same movie that I saw 20 years ago. It's a little picture you might have heard of called Terminator 2, Jim Cameron.
Never heard.
What's that?
Right? But it had the same beat. It had the same pacing as Terminator 2. It felt very much like a, not necessarily a ripoff as much as it followed a similar flow. And I swear I was looking at Mel Gibson the entire movie when I was actually looking at Hugh Jackman. It was a spitting image. But, you know, when I take away the comic book aspect of it, when you consider the fact that the filmmakers intentionally chose the name Logan instead of Wolverine, you bring in the essence of the fact that you're looking at a man who has who is singular in his loneliness. He doesn't have anyone in the world. He doesn't know where to go. He's aimless. But he eventually will have a sense of purpose and do one final duty to bring closure to his world. And when you look at it from that perspective, I think the overall movie works for me. I agree with all of the issues that you guys have raised. But I will admit that if I actually had a star rating that I used on a consistent basis, it's hem and hawed. I originally rated it 4.5 stars. I've actually since backed it down to 4 stars, only because you guys brought up some valid concerns about about certain aspects of the movie.
Right. I mean, I've thought about this too, and I honestly have thought I should go see it again because I probably need to write another review because, like, I'm second guessing myself on my initial reaction to the movie because everybody's gush fest about it.
Right.
You know, it's not a reinvention of the wheel here. It's a very good movie, and I think it has the liberty to do so because essentially Hugh Jackman's done.
Right.
Right. Until they give him $30 million to show up in Deadpool 2 or you know what I mean, or the X-Force movie.
Yes.
I think Hugh Jackman will be back as Wolverine. I think he's going to take a little break. And this is a good segue because I know we've been focused on Hugh Jackman on Podcasting Them Softly this week, and it broke today that Hugh Jackman is now going to star in Michael Mann's next movie, which is, Jesus, I would imagine that the four of us couldn't be happier about that news.
Oh, huge. I'm psyched.
It originally, De Niro was originally cast in it, and then the movie got reworked to Christian Bale. I should back up and say it's about the Ferrari dude, the guy that...
Yeah.
That made the Ferrari, the Italian car designer or car maker.
Yep.
And then Christian Bale was going to play it, and we all got excited, and then Christian Bale didn't want to do it because he didn't want to put on weight and gain weight or whatever the deal was. But Hugh Jackman's going to do it.
He just lost it. He didn't want to put it back on or something. So.
I don't know what the case was there, but I mean, this is apt timing for Hugh Jackman coming off the heels of what's going to be probably the biggest movie of his career, you know. I don't think it's going to get awards like Ryan Reynolds is predicting and a lot of people are saying. I think it came out too early in the year, and like Kyle brought out, they do not reward genre movies. I mean, if Deadpool didn't get nominated for anything, but I mean, that got a Writers Guild nomination, that got a Producers Guild nomination. I thought that movie was going to get nominated in like the eighth place, you know what I mean, for the eighth spot or the ninth spot for the best picture, and I would have thrown a shit fit because, Jesus, there's like 30 movies that came out that were better than Deadpool. But anyway, you know, I wasn't
huge on Deadpool either, so
yeah. I mean, I like Deadpool. I thought it was good. I didn't think it was phenomenal. But, you know,
I think Logan will be recognized for some technical awards, just as Suicide Squad was.
I think it'll be makeup. I agree with that. But as far as like Hugh Jackman being nominated or Patrick Stewart nominated,
not going to happen.
Patrick Stewart wasn't nominated for Green Room.
Green Room,
sure,
yeah,
not going to be nominated for
yeah.
Logan.
Logan will get its comeuppance with the People's Choice Awards later on this year. I guarantee that.
Right. No, I agree with you. But, let's talk about Hugh Jackman because I think, Hugh Jackman's universally loved because he's a super nice guy. He's super gracious. I think a lot of credit gets given to him because of his embracement of Wolverine and how good he knows that character has been to him, and he has the career he has today because of that character. And he hasn't really done a whole lot aside from playing Wolverine, but the stuff he has done, Denis Villeneuve's Prisoners, Christopher Nolan's The Prestige, you know, I'm going to play... The Fountain. Jesus, yeah. I'll plug Les Miserables, which I love saying it like that ever since John Travolta introduced it at the Golden Globe. So I don't know if you guys remember that. It was just so bad. But, I mean, the guy's supremely talented. I mean, he's classically trained as an actor. He can sing and dance. I think when he hosted the Oscars, he was phenomenal.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, he's a theater actor. But what I want to talk about is I think we can come to the consensus between all of us that his two of his best performances outside of, which I will say I think Logan is one of his best performances. I think,
agreed.
Yeah,
hands
yeah.
down. Hands down, it's his best
when,
performance.
When he's hitting that car with the shovel.
Oh.
Right.
Yes.
You know,
that whole,
you know,
that was just awesome.
But I think we could all agree that two of his best performances are The Prestige and Prisoners.
Yes,
absolutely.
And I think that those characters are very similar, and even Logan to a degree, and even Jean Valjean, he tends to pick characters that live in this moral ambiguity that as the film progresses, specifically with The Prestige and Prisoners, he becomes the villain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he starts out with nobility. I think Prestige and Prisoners is a little different because he had a tragedy. Well, he had a tragedy happen to him in both films early on in the first act of the film that his obsession takes over, his anger takes over, and he becomes the bad guy. And I think that's a true testament to him as an actor. And I think what works with him is he plays on the affability of himself. Because everybody loves Hugh Jackman. He's super good looking. He's super charming. You want to hang out with him, but these characters he ends up playing are awful. You know, The Prestige, he's the fucking straight-up villain in that movie. I think Prisoners, he gets a little bit more gray.
Sure.
In Prisoners, but I mean, The Prestige, he's the bad guy.
They all have it in I'm going to bring up The Fountain because it's my favorite,
yeah.
And I actually just watched it to prep for this. All of his characters, for the most part, have a kind of driven quality to them that kind of hinges on obsession, you know.
Right.
And I think it's neat the kind of what you're talking about how he explores the different extremities of that. So
right.
you have I mean, depending on how you view The Prestige, he's essentially a serial killer. And so there's the really evil, like, you know, totally self-absorbed. Then in Prisoners, it's kind of like, well, how far would you go if, you know, you were a father? What would you do? And it plays with that. And then you have The Fountain where he's, depending on how you view it, there's a lot of different interpretations. But my takeaway is kind of like, you know, the doctor's the central story, and he's driven on trying to essentially defeat death, but it's really about ultimately coming to peace with death. So those are different end results of obsession. And then he has a couple other. I did want to throw in Swordfish because I think that's really fun.
God, I haven't seen that since it came out.
And Les Mis, and I mean, he just. I agree. I think his with regard to Logan specifically, because it really is. He was probably my favorite part aside from Stewart, but he. Because he's finally, you know, he gets to throw the F-bomb, finally,
right.
You know?
Right.
And he gets to beat the hell out of a car because he's mad, and you get that frustration, and he didn't ham it up. Like, it's very respectful.
Yes.
Even if for me it's a little shallow, it's still very respectful. It's not cheesy. It's not like he's trying to, you know, he knows the essence of his characters. And I think that always comes through, whether it's just a little cameo or a little side thing, or even like, you know, Kate and Leopold or something like. I mean, he gets.
He's a lot of fun in Kate and Leopold.
Yes, he is. He is, and I mean, he really, you know, he doesn't. He, sure, not all of his movies might not be, like, you know, award-winning, whatever, but he doesn't make a lot of trash, you know? Like, you can tell...
No, you're right.
He thinks about his roles, he thinks about the script, and he really gets in the mind of the character. And
you could really argue that it's really early in his career that he took... Maybe it wasn't... Not a lot of it was trash, so to speak, but there were lesser roles. And then now that his career has grown because of this big role that he had, he's taken on more serious ones. He's able to do stuff like Prisoners, where you don't watch Prisoners and see the guy from Kate and Leopold. Like, you just, it's like a different part of his career. And absolutely. And so, and by the way, I know that I ragged on Les Mis in our private chat room, but he's probably my favorite thing about it. He's kind of the thing that works for me. Well, him and Anne Hathaway's big scene, but this the movie that I think falls flat on just about every level. But
everybody hates on Tom Hooper and his fucking The King's Speech beat The Social Network. I get it.
I love The King's Speech, but
I so do I.
Gone down the drain.
Okay, well, fuck it then. Whatever.
No,
Russell Crowe love? I think Russell Crowe's great. I think, like, Russell Crowe reinvents himself in Les Mis. No, it's too much? No? Kyle's not even with me on this one. That's where I know I'm fucking standing by myself.
I have to see it.
he does reinvent himself, but for me, Russell Crowe, it's going to be The Nice Guys and, like, Romper Stomper.
Yeah. Yeah,
okay.
I don't think Les Mis is a good performance for him. But
yeah, it's I'll just you know, on The King's Speech, I'm a unrepentant Winner's Bone fan, so you know that's where I'm at on that.
I wanted 127 hours to win that year, but
back to Jackman.
Are you serious? You have some weird tastes. I mean, I respect you for it because I'm the same way with a lot of stuff. But 127 hours, wow.
I love that movie. Although I mean, if my favorite movie that year was Valhalla Rising, but
okay,
of the Best Picture nominees, I wanted 127 hours to win.
Okay.
So.
Back to Jackman's versatility. My favorite performance of his is actually last year's Eddie the Eagle.
I haven't seen that.
You haven't?
No.
You know, it's a 180 from Prisoners, where he starts out as a down and out drunkard, and he kind of, like Logan, he finds himself, and he has a very effervescent and effable quality about himself, where when he's in character, he's just a lot of fun, and you can see it in his performance. And some of his key sequences are in the trailer, but he just had a lot of fun with it. And I think for me, that's probably one of his more memorable non-Wolverine performances that I can actually remember. I've seen Prisoners, but it was years ago, and I remember liking the movie. I haven't seen The Prestige. Shame on me for being a cinephile who hasn't seen it.
That's Nolan movie.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah,
that is Nolan's best movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think Inception is probably a little better movie.
I'm the one here who probably doesn't like Inception and everybody else does, but I'm not a fan of that one. But I love The Prestige.
It is.
I like Inception. I like it a lot. I don't love it like most people do, but I think Inception's really well made.
Yeah,
I just have a hang-up with Joseph Gordon-Levitt, man.
That's kind of where I'm at. I think it's well made, but Prestige is just, oh, man, what an experience. What
so
an experience.
David Bowie's Tesla.
I love that performance.
Just that scene of the top hats, man. That's just every time.
When I get back to Arizona from Tennessee, I will be ordering The Prestige and watching it.
Yeah, there get it on Blu-ray. It's probably like $10 on Amazon. It's so worth it, man. All right, so we've covered the Jackman. Now let's close our chat with, aside from Logan, what's your guys' favorite? I shouldn't say favorite Hugh Jackman performance as Wolverine, What's your assessment of his progression as Wolverine throughout the continuity aside? Because the continuity of the X-Men movies has become more confusing than the Terminator movies. With the soft reboot of First Class, and then the hard reboot of Days of Future Past, and then fucking X-Men Apocalypse, which I think is abysmal. I mean, I don't know how you guys feel about that, but...
I will defend it.
I mean,
oh, God.
I think it's fine.
I think Days of Future Past is one of... I think that's the best X-Men movie, including the Wolverine movies and Deadpool. I think it's the best Fox comic X-Men movie. And I think Days of Future Past is one of the best comic book movies ever made. But I find myself alone on that one, I feel like. In general and on the podcast. But
it took me 3 viewings to warm up to Days of Future Past for some reason, I don't know why. But on the 3rd viewing, everything clicked for me, and I love that movie. It's probably a very, very close, aside from Logan, because you said aside from Logan, I think Logan is the best X-Men movie, but X-Men related, I should say. But I think it's a very close tie between X2 and Days of Future Past.
No,
X2 and
Days of
Future Past are really good for me. Really, really good.
It's the second movies in the X-Men franchise that I feel are the best ones, and the third ones we'll take the Logan
and nobody else will.
we'll take the Wolverine trilogy out of that because
That's probably a good thing because I haven't seen the first 2 Wolverine side movies.
Okay. It's not worth it, man.
No. Ben, hang on.
I just wanted to get in there before Frank did.
Do you like Liev Schreiber?
Yes.
Dude, then I'm telling you, you got to see Origins.
I will.
Come on, you two, Joel and Kyle. I mean, you can think that movie's total shit. Like, I get it. I mean, I'm not going to defend it. I'm not going to defend it to that point. But isn't Liev Schreiber great as Victor Creed?
He's the best part.
He's better
than Jackman in the movie.
He is better than Jackman in the movie.
He chews up the scenery and then chews up the vomit of the chew up of the scenery. Great thing to watch that.
Right.
I will
add here that the first time that I saw Liev Schreiber was in Spear in 1998, and he's the only memorable thing about that movie.
He's the only thing I remember about it too. Maybe Samuel Jackson eating shrimp or something.
The octopus.
The octopus. Yes. Yeah. I saw that in theaters. I haven't seen it since. But
Dude, when I saw that movie when I was in like middle school on HBO, I thought that was the fucking smartest movie ever made.
Have you watched it since?
Yes.
Okay.
It does not hold up.
No.
Whatsoever.
Imagine it doesn't.
Not hold up.
Not so much. Yeah. I'll throw in. I guess if we're just focusing on the character Wolverine, I really like X2. I remember seeing it in the theater, and I was kind of, I mean, like, I liked the first one. It is what it is. But I remember, like, specifically the 2 scenes that always stand out, the one where they're like, put the claws down, and he's like, they're attached. And he's like standing on the front porch, and they shoot him in the head. But when they invade the school, and he straight up starts killing guys. I remember being, I was like, whoa, he's killing guys. Oh, they're showing people getting killed. I was like, okay. And he just really like embraced that kind of primal ferocity that you finally get to see in Logan.
That home invasion is one of his best moments in the series. One of Jackson's best moments.
Like when he dives off the top story onto the guys and all that.
Yep.
The commitment in his face to those movements is amazing. And I know that he probably did some of his own stunts there. I can imagine.
The irony of this is too thick for me to ignore, but I think that one of the best Wolverine moments is when he kills Jean Grey in X3.
I like that movie, that moment.
I think the only 2 redeeming factors in X3 is when he kills Jean Grey, and you can just see the torment on his face. Like, you know he's the only one that can do this. He's the only one that's strong enough to do it, and he's the only one that can stop it. And then when Magneto chews out fucking Pyro about, like, after Professor X gets killed, and he says something like he's done more for mutant kind than whatever. And I like how Magneto leads the X-Men at the end of that, and I don't like Halle Berry in any of the X-Men movies.
She's a weak spot.
And then she drops the South American accent after the first movie. Yeah, it's just like, it's like, what are you, Kevin Costner and Robin Hood Prince of the Thieves? You're just going to give up on the accent like midway through the movie.
Yeah.
But I think Days of Future Past works so well because it turns into a period piece. It's two different period pieces. It's like the fucking dystopian terrible future where we're, you know, it fucking trumps America after all the mutants get wrangled up by Mike Pence. And fucking, I'm not going to get political. I will say, though, did you guys see that meme with Mike Pence where it's just like every picture of Mike Pence looks like he's introducing legislation to like round up the X-Men?
Yeah.
I just thought that was funny. Yeah. But I think that's what works so well with it is it becomes a period piece 70s movie. And I think it's great, and I love the aspect of the old cast and the new cast, and it's like, how the fuck are you guys going to do this? It's like, oh, we're going to send Wolverine back in time.
Right.
Because he's the only one that can do it. He's the only one that can survive this. And that's why I thought the third movie, Apocalypse, failed, was because I thought that it used the period piece as a gimmick, and it's like, oh, hey, we're in the 80s now.
Right.
And I think Hugh Jackman's cameo in X-Men Apocalypse is just such bullshit
it totally falls apart. That scene doesn't work for me. It's just you know, lip
it's
service
to get Wolverine in the movie.
Yeah
because Hugh Jackman doesn't want to do it because he's making Prisoners or whatever he was doing, and he's just like, oh yeah, I'll do it for $5 million, let me get naked and run around with fucking, you know. But it's going to be really interesting to see what happens moving forward, because I know the next X-Men movie is going into production, and I think they're sticking with a young cast because obviously Hugh Jackman is done. I think Fassbender, McAvoy, and Jennifer Lawrence's contracts are up, and I'm pretty sure they're not going to be in the movie.
From what I hear from a fairly good source that I'm not going to give away, but is that Daphne Keane has a 5-film contract. So that's what I'm understanding, is that they're going ahead with this series like full force, and they're getting close to the point of filming this next one. So
which I think is appropriate.
Yeah,
because there's talk of Mangold doing an X-23 movie, right?
Yeah, and I think that's the one that they're about to do.
Oh
so.
My God! Do you know the only way to make this fucking X-23 franchise good? Is they need to bring in Victor Creed to mentor her. Seriously, dude, I fucking
full circle.
I mean, not to pull a Joel here and fucking milk my contracts, but like, you know, I fucking asked a few people like, what the fuck is going on after I saw the movie, because I'm the only person in the world that's hung up about Liev Schreiber not being in Logan. And I was told that it was because of scheduling conflicts with Ray Donovan, and Victor Creed was in the original draft of the script. Mm-hmm.
I feel like Fox wanted to move away from Origins. Honestly, I felt like it was what was the series that they restarted and they didn't do anything from the first movie?
Fantastic Four.
They were probably,
which a sequel I think is coming out for that.
Yeah, but man, I feel like they're probably gonna steer away from that, like in every.
Yeah, but dude, no. I mean, but here's the thing: you're done with the Wolverine trilogy. You're gonna take the best aspect from the first movie, which is Liev Schreiber, and interject him into Logan. I mean, fuck, dude, if Disney's not going to shy away from the Star Wars prequels, I think Fox is okay with...
Yeah, probably. And I don't want to give off the, like, this idea that I'm comparing X-Men... I may not like X-Men Origins at all, but it's no Fantastic Four.
Fantastic Four.
It is the worst superhero movie ever.
I just feel bad for Michael B. Jordan, because he's in that heap of shit, and it's like, dude, you could have been Black Panther.
And
you
Miles
know?
Teller.
Yes.
Well, I think
Jordan's in the Black Panther movie.
No, he is. Yeah, I know he is.
He's the villain, right?
Yeah, I believe so.
It's like, dude, you could have been fucking Lando.
Yeah.
You know, young Lando in the Star Wars movie, but anyway. I don't know. I mean, what do you guys think? How long before Hugh Jackman comes back? Do you think they're going to recast Wolverine first, or do you think they're going to get him to come back as Wolverine?
I feel honestly like they're going to recast him. I don't know with who. I don't know who would work right now, but because I feel like Chris Pratt's a bit too Indiana Jonesy, and that vibe doesn't work with the character. I don't know who they would recast him with right now, and I don't even know if they're going to do it right now, but. For some reason, I feel like they might wait until next decade if they're gonna recast that character and reboot it.
I would agree with that.
Yeah,
well, it didn't take them long for Batman and Spider-Man.
Unless that's true.
Although, neither one of those actors played that character over the course of 17 years.
That's true.
I honestly wonder
if they're gonna stick with Daphne Keene for a while. Like
that's what I think. I think they're gonna.
It's gonna be Laura.
Yeah. Yeah, but here's the thing, though, man. It's Hugh Jackman has single-handedly held the X-Men franchise together, Deadpool notwithstanding, because Deadpool's its own thing. But he's been the focal point. And not only has he been the focal point, but he rebooted and saved the X-Men franchise. I mean, for as big of a heap of shit as Origins was, that spurred an unintentional trilogy, which spurred an unintentional... you know, soft reboot of the franchise that turned into, you know, the prequel trilogy that mixed everything together with Days of Future Past.
I think the difference with, like, Spider-Man and Batman, the other, is exactly kind of what you're talking about. Like, number one, he's been in this for how long? I mean, you know, it would be like, you notice we don't have a new Indiana Jones.
Right.
They announced that the other day, but go on.
So
well, no, he means actor.
Right. Like I just think he's too iconic.
Yeah.
That for them to do it quickly. I'm not saying that it's not going to happen, but I just don't. I think a whole lot of things have to really come together because there's so many projects in development right now between all these studios that I think it's kind of like a waiting game where, like, you know, they're kind of like playing like box office chess trying to see what so I don't you know, and with this whole drama going on with Batman and all, you know, the whole, like you said, the whole DC thing, I don't see them. I think Fox has kind of decided, okay, we're going to do the R-rated stuff,
right,
and just run with it because it seems to be working.
I'm glad that Fox is sticking to their guns, so to speak, and focusing solely on theatrical releases and not expanding the X-Men.
It's only a matter of time with Fox, dude.
Yeah. I'll be honest. I mean, like, I don't read a ton of comic books, but I did read the Old Man Logan stuff.
Yeah.
Kind of just because I was excited. Man, talk about that would be an excellent, like, FX, HBO type treatment of that.
Think about the licensing with that. Because, well, like, the Marvel licensing is all split up between, Red Skull.
Right, but they have Legion gives me hope, I guess, is where that thought
I need to bring
up your point, Kyle, about how Hugh Jackman is so seminal to Logan, it's hard to separate the two. I honestly think the only thing this is comparable to is when Sean Connery left as James Bond.
Yes.
And then the studio's like, oh, my God, what are we going to do? It's like, let's get George Lazenby. Let's get this guy that no one's ever heard of to be James Bond. And then, oh, my God, that didn't work.
So they brought him back.
Let's get Sean Connery back for another movie. And it's we found Roger Moore, thank God.
Well,
I think that's what it's going to turn into because I think you're right. I think Batman's different because there's been so many different Batmen throughout the course of, you know, modern cinema. No one really cares about Spider-Man except for, like, diehard fanboys. I don't think that's as big of a character. Superman, there's been two, as far as film goes. And I think Wolverine's very important to Hugh Jackman and vice versa. So it's going to be really interesting to see what they do. I don't think they're going to initially recast it right away. think they're going to see what happens with Deadpool 2.
The 2020s, because I think that would be smart.
They're going to see what happens with this X-Force. Jesus, all these, you know, everybody jumps on DC's ass about having all these movies in development. It's like Fox is out of control because they just lost their anchor. And, you know, Deadpool was a huge success. They have they have one movie outside of, you know, an X-Men movie, and that's Deadpool. And it's going to be interesting to see what happens, because they have everything riding on that, and what Kyle and Ben were talking about. I think I feel like Fox would be the first one out of the three to go to VOD with a theatrical release, you know, or do something kind of like that. I don't think that Marvel's going to change a thing. But they're probably going to have to soon, because all these contracts are going to be up.
Well,
with Robert Downey Jr.
and Chris Evans. Right, and I think another factor is the streaming. You mentioned VOD, so that makes me think of like Amazon and Netflix, because you have this.
They're about to take over in a big way.
Right, exactly.
Big way.
Huge. And I mean, like, I was just reading about Iron Fist is getting panned like left and right.
Oh, it's Marvel's huge. It's Marvel's first failure. I know, dude.
Right. Oh, what is that? Right. I wasn't as interested in that piece of it as much as I mean, like, what interests me is this experiment overall. Like, they're doing, you know, they did the self-contained hero stories. They're going to do like their mini Avengers, the Defenders.
Yeah, they're going to do the Defenders,
right,
on Netflix.
So
right.
I think when it's done, depending on how it works overall, because, you know, nothing is perfect, I think that could really pave the way for a lot of different options, and I think the studios that kind of see that, have the foresight to see what's possible, is going to determine what projects get made.
I wonder if this last couple of years since Daredevil came out, and now Jessica Jones, Iron Fist, whatever else is out there, I wonder if kind of we're right in that Netflix is going to kind of take over, because, you know, now they've got a Martin Scorsese movie in the pipeline. I feel like what's going to happen is they're going to kind of saturate us with Marvel shows on Netflix, and then what's going to happen in like the 2020s, maybe the mid-2020s or something, is the Marvel movies that come out are going to be on Netflix. They're going to be Netflix originals. I wonder if that's where we're headed. In terms of everything's gonna kind of flock to the television, or to the.
I feel like Ben's just shaking.
Ben, I was just
about
to say, just Ben is like trigger warning.
Yeah, Ben has been triggered by Netflix, by Jill bringing this up, and this we should come, all four of us should come back and do another podcast on the whole streaming thing, because I know a lot of us have a lot to say, and before Ben gets on his soapbox about it, I just want to interject. I shouldn't even say soapbox. Ben's gonna fucking grandstand here. But you know, I think Netflix acquiring Martin Scorsese's next movie with De Niro, Pacino, Harvey Keitel, Joe Pesci, whoever else he's gonna get in that movie, changes everything.
Absolutely changes everything.
Changes
it
everything. Good or bad.
No end how this happened. And I think that it signals a shift. If Martin Scorsese, of all people, is interested in shifting his filmography over here, people are going to follow that. I feel like Netflix is gonna kind of own. I feel like they could actually buy Hollywood. They make like what, $1 billion a month or something. It's insane. And so that's
after they almost ruined their company a couple years ago.
Oh really?
You know,
I didn't know that.
Well, with the whole streaming disc shift.
Right.
Remember when they did that, like three years ago or whatever it was?
I think they bounced back.
Oh, fuck yeah, they've bounced back.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that they rebounded pretty hard. But
yeah.
I think it's very telling, considering that Amazon did Manchester by the Sea, did The Neon Demon, did Woody Allen's new movie, did the Woody Allen TV show. Manchester by the Sea won a bunch of Oscars, or two Oscars.
They won big last week because they also distributed in the U.S. The Salesman, which won Best Foreign Language Film. So it's like, like these streaming services are now going into distribution and production, you know, arenas, and it's really interesting to see, and so that's why I feel like there's this massive shift that's going to happen.
But Amazon didn't get Martin Scorsese. Let's close it out then. take us home.
I'm not going to get on my soapbox here, but I do want to talk about The Irishman for a second because the whole Paramount deal fell apart. But what hasn't been talked about except for one brief blurb is that the international theatrical distribution rights, which were secured at Cannes last year, are actually still in place. So Netflix doesn't yet have it completely. Those deals have to be untangled. And I'm guessing that just like Silence late last year, The Irishman is going to be entangled in a legal quagmire for a while. Netflix won't get it by 2019. That would be my prediction.
Wow.
But I do agree that it is telling that Netflix was able to come to a deal with the financer of the movie, Mexican company. I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head.
Yeah, I can't remember either. But yeah, I mean, it's still a big acquisition on their part, and
it's
huge. Still signals that even if there's something like a Martin Scorsese movie entangled in legal stuff, the fact that Netflix, like you said, was even able to make this acquisition is huge, and that's why I feel like by the maybe even the early 2020s, I don't know if it's going to be the year 2020, but you know, the early 2020s, I feel like there's going to be a massive shift toward everything just kind of populating over to Netflix. It's what people like to watch. People like to binge. Now, that's the thing. It's not so much buying television series on DVD anymore. It's binging that and then watching the movies that Netflix comes out with from the comfort of your home or wherever. And that's why I feel like it's a huge turning point right now. Yep. Or there's a turning point that's like right around the corner or something. There's a big event coming to Hollywood, and I feel like it involves Netflix. And who would have thought?
Yeah.
Like, do you remember 3 years ago, 4 years ago, 5 years ago, whatever? The biggest piece of news is that they were separating the discs from the streaming. And now they're getting Martin Scorsese movies. I mean, it's
right.
Crazy.
It's gonna be theaters open for just Star Wars, Marvel, and whatever big movies, and everything else is gonna be streaming.
Yep.
And I mean, I get it. I'll tell you what. I mean, we're gonna wrap it up here. But when I saw Logan, dude, the theater was so fucking hot. I was sweating because the heat was on so much. And when Logan's dying, saying goodbye to his daughter, the lights came on, and it was just like, this is why I want to watch shit at home. You know,
yep,
because
exactly.
You know, it's the theater experience is becoming shittier, I feel like, which is a shame because Logan needs to be seen on a big screen.
You've got these companies that are kind of trying to salvage it. Angelica, they still have very good theaters. Alamo Draft House.
Alamo, yeah.
Really, really good.
I don't know why there's not an Alamo Draft House in Chicago. It really bothers
I hear, I, from what I understand, it's coming. I don't know when, but That's what I understand. I'm friends with the person who helped create it. So
we got one in Phoenix earlier this year, and I absolutely love going there.
Well, at least Tim Fugli sends me the cool pint glasses. I have the Batman vs Superman and Suicide Squad one, so I got that going for me.
Nice,
that's
awesome.
Colorado, but okay. Well, this wraps up our Logan Hugh Jackman gush fest for the week, and next week, I think we all decided on for our theme is going to be monster movies to coincide with King Kong, which one of you has seen.
I've already seen it.
I think Ben saw it.
Seeing it tomorrow evening.
And Joel's seeing it tomorrow. Ben, can you give us like just a brief? Just give us a one word reaction to Kong.
Awesome.
Oh, there you go.
Cool.
There you
have it from Ben. Okay, well, that wraps it up. We'll be back next week with talking about Kong Skull Island. I know Tim saw it, and Tim posted a review, too. That's the other person I was thinking of, but he's under the weather, apparently. So, okay, well, thanks for – dude, this was – guys, this was a lot of fun, and I think it actually went pretty well for being a circle jerk. So thanks
I agree.
Everybody for taking thank you, Ben. Thank
no
you
worries.
For taking the time out of your schedule. I know, you know, one of you has a family, the other guy's traveling, and Joel and I just like to sit at home. So it worked out. You know, it worked out. It worked out well.
Awesome, guys.
So, awesome. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.